All right, let's begin. So, who's your daddy? Fertility technology and halacha. As I said, we did this a couple months ago, but there's a piece at the end that we didn't get to on Shabbos, and if we want to, the next time we can continue onto the topics. But we'll start with the basics. So before we even start, actually, on the sources, we have to wonder to ourselves, what are the nafkaminot? What are the practical differences for using fertility technology in halacha? So there are, we'll distinguish two basic forms of fertility technology, two basic forms of, you know, causing birth to happen in a scientific way that, you know, that's not natural, so to speak. One is classic, regular, which one is which? In vitro fertilization. IUI, thank you. Intrauterine insemination is when you inject the semen or the zera into the woman's womb, or somehow get it to go into the uterus or into the womb, so that she naturally conceives, so to speak, and gives birth. And everything takes place inside the woman. And then there's IVF, which there are a lot of different versions of it, but the main point is that the woman also has some kind of infertility problem. And so the eggs are either taken out of her and then inseminated outside of her body and then reinserted, or another woman provides the eggs and they inseminate the eggs, but then they insert those into her body. And then there's other cases of surrogacy where you do kind of both, and you even put it in another woman, where another woman, you inseminate the egg, and then you put it into another, all kinds of, you know, permutations. But we'll deal with just the first two for now. Those are the simplest one, and we'll deal with the first one first, IUI. Now, it may surprise us, although if you were at the Shia, then it won't surprise you, that the Gemara actually refers to IUI. It seems surprising because the Gemara didn't have needles, didn't have, you know, they're in the times of the Talmud, they don't have injections or anything like that. Doesn't seem to be any way that they could have this, but it does. Gemara and Chagiga, oh, sorry, I promised that before we did that, we would just talk about what the nafkaminas might be. In other words, what areas of halacha are affected by this kind of technology, by these kinds of new situations?
Mamzerut.
Question of Mamzerut.
Yerusha,
for sure. You know, who's the father in these situations? It's Kohen and Levi. If you know, if the father was a Kohen, you know, by the way, in intrauterine, sometimes the semen will come from the father. Sometimes it will come from someone else.
Or maybe from a non-Jew.
That could be the someone else.
Initially, they take someone from the non-Jew.
They take someone from?
From non-Jew.
Generally, yes, they do.
So that's there wants to be no mamzeru then?
Right. That's the attempt. What else? What other things might be affected? You said Yerusha, Mamzerut. Yibum. What happens if a woman only has one child and it's from IVF or IUI, whatever, whichever one it is, maybe it's different, and it's the only child she ever has, and then her husband passes away? Does she have to marry her husband's brother? That's the only child that she ever had. Does it affect Yibum? All kinds of situations like that. Okay.
Does the Gemara describe a case where a Nabi was conceived because his mother
Not the Gemara. Yirmiyahu. There's a tradition, there's an apocryphal tradition that Yirmiyahu was conceived that way. Based on the Gemara that we're about to see. Based on the Gemara, itself doesn't say that.
His mother bathed, then there was something in the water.
That possibility shows up in the Gemara that we're about to read, okay. But the tradition that Yirmiyahu was conceived that way doesn't show up in any Gemara. It shows up in latter sources. Okay. Yeah. So the Gemara in Chagiga says, oh, another nafkamina, by the way, is just whether or not you're mekayim in the mitzvah peruvu. It's an important nafkamina. Like, let's say, for example, you know, you do IUI, and then that's it, and then you kind of give up on any other kind of fertility treatment. Like, maybe potentially a new technology, a new medicine comes out that could increase your sperm count or something like that. And you don't take it because you say, I already did it, or something like that. Okay, Benzoma was asked.
And then you go IVF.
IVF seems even more remote than IUI, at least if it's the husband that's providing the semen. So, Ben Zoma was further asked, may a high priest marry a virgin who has become pregnant? Oh boy. So a Kohen Gadol is not supposed to marry a Zona. So you have a situation here, a non-betula. Every Kohen is not supposed to marry a Grusha, right? But a Kohen Gadol is not supposed to marry a Zona either. So can a high priest marry a virgin who has become pregnant? So what seems to be going on over here is that there is a woman who claims to be a virgin, and yet she's pregnant. She's definitely pregnant. There's no doubt about that. She claims to be a virgin, and all signs point to her being a virgin, meaning that she has her, she still has her betula. Okay, somehow we know that. So Gemara says, do we in such a case take into consideration Shmuel's statement that Shmuel said, I can have repeated sexual connections without causing bleeding, or is perhaps the case of Shmuel rare? Now, the Gemara has a much more clean language with it. It's called Hataya. Hataya is when the man inserts himself in a certain angle such that it doesn't actually cause the woman's hymen to break. That's what the Gemara has. Comes up in a bunch of places in Shas. It's usually rejected out of hand, not taken into consideration. But over here, it's brought up because it seems to be the only explanation for how this woman could have become pregnant, that there really was Bia, but it just didn't take away her betula. So the Gemara says, Ben Zoma answered, the case of Shmuel is rare. We don't think that that's what happened over here. That's likely not what happened. But we do consider the possibility that she may have conceived in a bath, meaning that she was in a bath, in a bathhouse, and while she was in there, some leftover material from someone else made its way into inside of her, and she conceived. And that's how the baby came to be. The Gemara says, no, but there's a problem with that. Shmuel said, a spermatic emission that doth not shoot forth like an arrow cannot fructify. I think I said last time, this is probably the most unbelievable statement translated into English that I've ever seen. But basically the point is over here that only in the natural way, when a man injects it directly into the woman, is that going to actually cause conception. But once the sperm is just floating around in a bunch of water, it's not going to actually do anything. So Gemara says, in the first instance, it had also shot forth like an arrow. So Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that it has to be injected that way. It just means that it has to come out in such a way that it would cause conception. And here it did. The fact that the sperm is floating around the water is irrelevant. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara. This is how the virgin became pregnant. She got pregnant through the bathhouse.
Okay.
What? Maybe. That's not the simplest explanation, but it could be. So that's a Gemara, it's a famous Gemara that kind of takes us off over here. Now, it gets used. This Gemara gets used halacha l'maisa, unsurprisingly. So the Taz says as follows. He quotes, we're going to have a few different authorities here. The Taz, Rav David Ben Zimri, I believe. No, David. The Taz is the Torah Zahav on the Shulchan Aruch, the son-in-law of the Bach. And I think his name is David Ben Zimri, or David Zimri, something like that. I can't remember now. So he quotes the Chalkat Mechokek, who's another commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, who wrote that there is room for doubt as to whether a man fulfills pru or vu, and whether the child is recognized as his for all matters if a woman becomes pregnant in a tub. So he is besafek. The Chalkat Mechokek is a safek on all matters. In other words, he leaves the whole thing as a safek. I don't know whether you're kind of pru or vu. I don't know whether or not it's considered yours. Meaning the owner of the original sperm, the biological father of this child, whether or not he's considered the father at all, he's not sure. Okay? By the way, what's our initial inclination on this? The owner of the sperm, what should his status be vis-a-vis the child? What's our, a priori...
In which case are you talking
about? The case where... A man's sperm made his way into a woman's body.
He was in the tub. He's the father.
He's the father. Did he fulfill pru or vu?
Yes.
He fulfilled pru or vu. So it's enough to him for his zera to cause.
You don't need intent.
What kind of intent do you have
intent
for pru or vu?
To do the mitzvah. And if you're just doing it in a bath. And then it happens to impregnate some woman. That's, there's no intent.
I don't know. Do you have to have intent?
Know about it. I don't know.
Okay.
This father doesn't necessarily know that he's the father of this child.
Generally speaking, do we have to have intent for mitzvahs?
No.
Yes, we do. We do. But generally speaking, we do. We pass the mitzvot zecha kavana. Now, that means, just at a basic level, it means that when you perform an act, you have to know that what you're doing is a mitzvah. Are there any exceptions to this? I can think of at least one that Rashi mentions. The famous Rashi is one of my favorite Rashis, that by definition, there is a mitzvah that is done without intention. By definition. If it doesn't come to you right away, it's not going to come to you. No, why? By definition, there's a mitzvah that cannot be performed with intent.
Living in Israel. No, if you're living in
Kavana right now.
It's a mitzvah.
No, no, no. No. Shichicha. Think about it.
Right.
You're walking in a field.
Right. You can't.
And you drop something. Right?
If you remember it, you have to get it right.
You drop something. And then you keep walking, and you leave it, and you leave it. When you dropped it, even if you, you know, if you didn't remember it all, so then it's for sure fine. It's for, you know, then for sure you didn't think about it. Even if you did remember, you notice it afterwards. You're not allowed to pick it up, but your performance of the mitzvah already occurred. So we have some mitzvahs that you can perform without having any in mind. So the question is, where does Puruvu? By the way, at what, you know, this we're going to touch back on later, but at what point, you know. How does your kavanah work over here? I assume you mean b'shat bia, b'shat tashmish, b'shat maaseh. You have to have in mind puruvu, right? So, what's the problem with that? Is there any problem with that? I mean, percentage-wise, right?
Okay.
You don't know what's going to happen with this mitzvah. You have no idea. You pick up a lulav, you know you're going to do it.
But if you're planning, so yes, you would think about it. I think.
What happens if you were... okay, I have an interesting question for you. What happens if a couple thought they were on birth control?
Yeah, okay.
And then all of a sudden they had a baby. Did they? Are you saying that they're not going to fulfill Puruvu?
They will. Yes, they will.
Oh, clearly they will.
You're right.
So let's... Okay, so we have to revisit this.
Doesn't that contradict what you're saying earlier? Because then they didn't have the kavona to do it.
I don't know. It could be that the Chalkot Mechokek, he thinks that... He is not sure... Mm-hmm. And I think it's more likely that the reason he's not sure is because there was no act that occurred at all. Mm-hmm. That's my guess is his reason for that. In other words, that the act itself, the act of bia, is a part of the mitzvah of Puruvu. You can't fulfill it. We're going to have to revisit this, though. The Beit Shmuel is another source, is another authority. He says, sought to prove it from the Bach, that's the Taz's father-in-law, where he said that a woman should be careful not to lie on a sheet where a man lay, lest she conceive from his seed, lest the child marry his paternal sister. Now, we have to parse this very carefully. The Bach said that you're not supposed to, a woman should not sit on a sheet where another man, not her husband, had lain, because there's a possibility that he may have left some residue over there that will enter her, and then she will become pregnant. And then, because she doesn't know who the husband is, who the father is, rather, she doesn't know who this person was, so what may happen is that child will marry a relation of that. Okay, so what happened over here? So what happened? So there's a few pieces to take from here. The first piece that we have to take from here is that clearly the Bach is assuming that what?
Yeah, but we go back to what David said earlier. Like, it has to be some sort of intent, not intent, but...
Well, hold on. Cow, para. Let's step by step over here.
Laying on the same sheet that is...
But wait. What is the Bach assuming when he says that a woman should be careful not to do this because lest she come to have a child, and then the child will marry the daughter or something of that. So what is he assuming over here? Not like the Chalkat Mekokek. He's assuming for sure that it can happen. And what else? That if it does happen, that the child
is recognized as
belonging to
the father.
Right. The man who was on a sheet before.
Correct? The Bach is assuming that. Because without that assumption, the whole thing doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Right. He says the child is not.
He says he's not sure. But the Bach is clear. Bach is clear that the child belongs to the owner of the Zera, the owner of the semen. Right? That's clear.
Yeah.
Now, what else does he say, though? That the woman, if she lays on the sheet, What's the problem? The problem is only that the child may grow up and marry the daughter of the father. What is not the problem? What is apparently not a problem at all?
That she got pregnant from somebody else.
Yafeh! That she's a married woman and she just became pregnant from the zera of someone that's not her husband.
He didn't say
that's not a problem. Fine. Okay, fine. But that's not a problem, according to the Bach.
Okay.
Interesting. So while it is his, is apparently no gilei arayot over here. There's no problem with gilei arayot when she becomes impregnated.
Also, gilei arayot needs intent. No?
Something is missing. Something is missing. We see that this is considered a son for all matters, but this is not proof. We might say this to be strict, but not to be lenient. The Taz throws a wrench into the whole thing. He says, no, maybe the Bach doesn't really believe that for sure this is the case. He just says we have to be concerned. The Bach said, maybe the Bach doesn't say for sure that we have to be, maybe that we're just doing this to be machmir, but to be mekel, we might also be mekel if we, I shouldn't say we should be mekel, we might be machmir the other way in any other situation. In other words, maybe Yerusha, maybe the child won't be Yorish from the man, because that's a chumrah the other way. In other words, maybe we should be machmir on all fronts, because we don't know. So we'll say that it's the child when it's inconvenient, and we'll say that it's not the child when that's inconvenient.
How did they know in those days? I mean, it's not that they ran tests, and they knew exactly who was the child.
I mean, you could know if, like, for example, the husband wasn't around or something like that. That's one way you could know.
Right. Okay.
Can I get back to a previous? It could be a clear case of gilei arayot if the woman is sitting on the sheet where her brother was lying previous.
Says who? It sounds like that's. The, I mean, I would read the Taz. Sorry, I would read the Bach.
No.
Why would
I would say the why is it different than a married woman with
a brother and sister?
But not doing. There's no intent there. That's wasn't doing it.
Forget about intent. There's no Mesa.
There is not.
So we have to figure out where does the Gilei Arayot lie, but I think it's clear from the Bach that he's not concerned about that, because the Bach should have just said she shouldn't lay on the sheet because she may become impregnated, and that's a violation of Gilei Arayot.
But Gilei Arayot is a verb; you have to do something.
I agree with you. Okay, so that takes us to the next section. So now let's talk about Halacha Lamaisa in the 20th century. Okay, so Rav Moshe Feinstein. So he writes as follows. He says, "B'davar masha she'alti merayato rabbanita kvoda marat Chana tichya." Name of the woman is Chana. Avor isha achat, but it's not even Chana that's asking the question. Chana's just asking on behalf of somebody else.
I have a friend.
Exactly. Avor isha achat she nitbaisha lishol mikvot rato nitarachti lahashiv mishum sheratziti lachkor adavar. It's rofim mumchim ukufish nodati alei chotni harav agon Rav Moshe David Tendler shlita.
Son-in-law.
That's right. Rav Moshe Tendler, who is a Rosh Hashiv in YU, is his son-in-law. Mashem osivim lezera shel ish zem yizera ish acher shekorim booster. Hu rak inyan ramod lashkit ruach bala isha sheyachshov shavlad ugam yizera shalov hu aviv aval be'emet eino klum. So what's going on over here? So the woman was told by the doctor that her husband, she's not the problem, she's fine. Her husband's the problem. Her husband's sperm doesn't have the koach to impregnate her. So what are they going to do? They're going to take his sperm and they're going to combine it with another who knows whose sperm and use that other man's sperm as a booster for her husband's sperm, so it'll increase the amount of zera in there, and that way she will become pregnant.
Now what is Rabbi Tendler's role in this? I didn't hear.
Rabbi Tendler's a doctor.
But what did he say about this?
So Rav Moshe said, I didn't answer this for a while because I wanted to talk to some experts, and I spoke to my son-in-law, and my son-in-law said, this is a bunch of bunk. This is just something that they told her in order to quiet her mind, in order to make her feel comfortable taking the zera from someone that's not her husband. The bottom line over here is that her husband is impotent and cannot make her pregnant, and they're not even going to do what they said they're going to do. They just told her that. Really, it's another man's sperm that's making her pregnant. It's not her husband.
I was going to say that Rav Moshe Feinstein frequently would consult with his son-in-law.
That's right.
Whenever there was a medical issue.
That's right.
That's right. Because he was the expert that he consulted.
That's right. Okay, it's not important. Just pointing out that you can only become pregnant from one source. You're not going to get become pregnant from two different sources. It's not like two sperms get together and reinforce each other. Either way. So what's the din? So the next paragraph. The din zera acher Mufurash the Isur Bataz. The idea of having Zera Acher, the idea of having, of becoming pregnant to some random man's, from some random man's sperm, that's Mufurash the Isur. We saw it. It was in the Taz. The Taz says the woman shouldn't sit on a sheet that another man had sat on. That's, it's Asur. It's Asur to do that. Like the Taz said, he says, you have to be concerned for this, so you're not allowed to do it. However, Moshe points out the same thing we pointed out. The Vlad is going to be kasher. So he says, this is only a problem when you know for a fact that the, you know, the owner of the sperm that was on the sheet was a Jewish man. However, if we can be sure that the sperm being supplied is a non-Jew, then it doesn't even matter who he is. We don't even care. He could be completely anonymous. He could be of any ethnicity, any nationality, anything. It doesn't matter, because the bottom line is that once he gets involved, so he's the baby that's going to come out is not going to be related at all to the father. Because once it enters the mother, it becomes Jewish, and now it is no longer related to the father, no matter who he is. Ain lo yichus. This is Rav Moshe.
It is no longer related to the father.
Kevan ain lachush lekum de ain lo yichus la'av hanochri. Right. The father, and I say father, I mean the biological father, not the husband. Exactly like Gerut.
But you're talking about only the Av HaNachri, not if the Av is Jewish.
Correct.
If the Av is Jewish, he still has like...
Correct. For now, that's what he's assuming, yes.
If the Av is Jewish, he still has responsibility for sheep with Av, for example. Right?
We don't know who is sheep, but we have to be Choshesh. But here, well, we know where we're getting the sperm. Oh, so hold on. So, you know... we're all assuming that, you know, the whole thing is very modern and systematic, and we know exactly where the sperm is coming from. So Moshe doesn't even rely on that. He doesn't even assume that. What he assumes is as follows. He says, you know what? I don't think I have it on here, but basically, Moshe just he actually feels. I was surprised by this. He feels comfortable just assuming that it comes from a non-Jew, based on the amount of non-Jews versus Jews. Meaning, he doesn't even need to know, Rav Moshe, what the source is. Where do you find that? Where do you see that?
After the bold line.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, good. So hold on. So let's get there, actually. Let's keep going. V'gam yol ma'a sh'azari yamishal nochri afla asover in the mizera acher humamzer gam b'lo bia. Even those who say... Okay, so he says, look... what are we going to do about the whole Mamzerut issue in terms of the sperm coming from someone else? So if it came from another Jew, right? If it came from another Jew and the woman is married, so if they actually had Bia, then it would be a Mamzer. So what do you do if they didn't have Bia, but they did have the Zera? So he says, I don't believe that's a Mamzer, but there are those who do. But this will take care of everything, because there's never going to be a Mamzer from a non-Jew. The Mizera Acher Mamzer Gam B'lo Bia Ain Bo Tzar Post Kim Shehevi Ken B'Shem Sefer Ben Levi. The Sefer Ben Levi is the one that says that. Av Shapashot She'en Shitato Klum Neged Rabbeinu Peretz. I don't think he's right, because Rabbeinu Peretz, which is what the Taz was quoting, right? The Taz was quoting the Bach, who was quoting the Rabbeinu Peretz, who doesn't assume that way. Because if he assumed that way, then he would say that the problem with the woman sitting on the sheet is Mamzerut. But that's not what he says. So he says Aval Shal Nochri Av Shitato Reav Mibiad Nochri Halacha She'en Avlad Mamzer. If a Jewish woman has relations, if a married Jewish woman has relations with a non-Jew, the Vlad that comes from that is a Jewish non-Mamzer. That's the halacha. So Rav Moshe says, you're covered on all sides as long as the source is a non-Jew. B'shat HaTchak, Moshe is not comfortable saying, you know, this is a great idea, But he says when the woman really, really needs it, she feels like she really wants to have a baby, so take it from an Anju. Even Stam Zara, they don't even know where it's from. Because most of the time, they're going to be from a Nochri.
You wouldn't say
there's
a Shroyer.
Levadma, where is he though? Levadma
Shem Rabbi. You're talking about donors.
In New York, yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Levadma Shem Medina Hem Rav Akum. First of all, there's the fact that in Chutz Laaret, you know, I don't know, 99% of people. 99% of people are not Jewish. He says, you're not going to find that there are many Jewish men providing sperm to a sperm bank. That's not going to happen. And if you can find out that it does come from an Achri, better that way. But he says, if you can't find out, I give you a heter to do it even stop. So that's what Rav Moshe says on this point. Now, should point out that there are those that disagreed with him vociferously. The most famous is the Satmar Rebbe. Satmar Rebbe had a long tshuva that I didn't put any of it on here, but I did read through most of it. I was actually very impressed. Like I never read a tshuva by the Satmar Rebbe, the former Satmar Rebbe, Viol Teitelbaum. He has two tshuvas over there that are, you know, pretty heavyweight tshuvas. They're really serious. But Rav Moshe is Rav Moshe, and his opinion appears to have taken hold. Satmar Rebbe thought it's mamzerus and it's terrible, and because Rav Moshe. His opinion is that you could even take from a Jew. That's his opinion. Should be clear about that. He says if you want to get out of everything, take it from a non-Jew. However, if you took it from a Jew, it would still be fine. Because he thinks Rabbeinu Peretz, the Taz, the Bach, it's as long as there's no Ma'aseh Bia, there's no Mamzerus.
Not only is the Satmar Rebbe opposed to it, but the Hasidim were very vociferously protesting.
Yeah, they did. One of the things, yeah.
And throwing rocks through his windows.
They weren't happy with
it. This is out of compassion for the woman, I suppose, to a certain degree. Obviously, it's halakhically proven, but seems...
Now, the next question, which is very, very interesting, I just think is very interesting, is the question is, how do you do this? What is the halakhic way to... backtrack for a second. So, we've been assuming over here so far is that the only way to get the woman pregnant is to take Zera from another man. Her husband is completely impotent. There's nothing he could do. However, sometimes there's a separate problem, and it's not a hormonal problem. It's not a chemical problem, but rather it's mechanical or it's time-based. And for whatever reason, the husband is actually fine. The woman is capable of becoming pregnant. However, for whatever mechanical or whatever reason, they can't get the zera where it needs to go. So they do IUI with the husband's sperm. So you're not taking it from another man, you're injecting from the husband into the woman, which means now you have to get a sperm donation though from the husband. So the question is, how do you do that? Seems like it should be simple after all. I mean, it's just a step removed. Like, what do you... But Moshe makes it complicated. So he says as follows. Lifamim she'isha al yedei bia mitzad shechaser b'me'at koach achiyut lo magiin letoch harechem. Sometimes, for whatever reason, it's just a matter of not being able to get the husband's sperm into the wife quickly enough or strong enough or whatever. You can inject it. Cannot be done through, for want of a better word, through... masturbation, ejaculation. It cannot be done. Husband's not allowed to do that, even in this situation.
Did you say kelim?
Or kelim, sharofim, motziim, or yadayim.
Kelim, which means if, I don't know if it's feasible, but if a doctor were to remove it with a syringe, I don't know if that's feasible.
No, that would be okay. That would be okay.
That's kelim and sharofim.
No, that would be okay, I think. Because that's not, he's not going through the... You'll see why. You'll see why it's okay. What's the problem? Even though the Gemara says that even when there's no problem with Hotzar Zera, because it's for the purpose of allowing him to marry, so it won't be Levatala, nevertheless, there's still a problem of Mishmush Hayadayim. It's a problem of lo tin af. The darish tana de Be'er Rabbi Shmuel lo tehei b'chaniuf bein b'yad bein b'rekel. In other words, doing it yourself is considered obviously not the direct violation of the commandment, but it's a version of the commandment of lo tin af. V'ezerzehu iser mitzad atzmo v'zelohu tar af letzarech lisa isha. That's not mutter under any circumstances, just like lotinaf is not mutter under any circumstances. Ulahali banim shelo hutru yisrael nezer. If there was a situation where it was required, like I don't remember exactly what the case was over there. I don't remember what the case was over there. I can't remember, but basically it was for the purpose of marrying. I don't know exactly what it was. But either way, he's pointing out that even when it's for the purpose of pru urvu or lisa isha, you're not allowed to do it. So in this case as well. So what are you going to do? V'lachei, bai heichi avdina and v'hutzuchor v'yosef abai letarit shemotzina ide hanachat chamima abe pukri v'hiru benashim she'eser b'zeh urak midin hutza zer levatala shebekan shehu letzorach lisa isha ein zeh levatala muter. Basically, by getting to a point without using your hands or any kelim, if it just happened by itself, through thoughts and things like that, that would be mutar. Okay. How easy that is obviously not so easy. We have no problem. What's it called? Ladush mi bifnim ulezarot mi bachutz. What does that mean? It means that right before the man climaxes and it comes out, so he pulls out and does it into a cup, into something else. In other words, the mishmush is not happening b'yadayim. That's the point over here. That he does everything naturally, and then when it comes time, he makes sure that it gets into a receptacle so that they can save it for later. He distinguishes between shechva zeh levatala, which is one thing, and mishmush yadayim, which is another thing. He says, you're right. Even if you were to do it mishmush yadayim, the problem wouldn't be shechvat zara levatala, because it's not levatala. It's going to go into the woman. The problem is separate. The problem is the mishmush yadayim. So you can separate the two things. You can make sure that it happens in the natural way, and just the zera comes outside, and that will be fine. V'im tzarech l'shnayim v'shlosha pa'amim, yaseza v'shtayim v'shalosh biot, do it two or three times. Im ishtavim tov l'herayon gam kesheyotzi hazera ba'akisim she'ilabesh. This was surprising to me. He'd even use a condom. Gives a heter to use a condom so that it can be caught and then it can be used later. The problem with using a condom is but here there's no problem, so you don't have to worry about it. There are two different facilities. I think I prepared this last time, and I don't remember actually what I said. There are at least two different facilities in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim that specialize in exactly this, and they have two different methods for doing this. One of them has a special wing where couples can go and be by themselves, and I think it's, what do they do? I can't remember now. I remember Rabbi Brander came to YU. He described both of these things. I think they collected after. I can't remember. I can't remember. But basically, there's two different shitas how to do this. One is in Bnei Brak. One of them is in Yerushalayim. It's pretty advanced how they do it, and it's based on this tshuva by Rav Moshe. Okay, so that is that. That's IUI when it's being injected into the woman directly. Now you have IVF. So we have a little bit of interesting story over here from CNN. Fertility clinic, the couple, you got the wrong embryos.
This is where Machon Pua.
Yeah, Machon Pua does all these things. Yeah. A fertility clinic implanted the wrong embryos in an in vitro procedure. Couples were in total shock after learning that the baby is not genetically theirs. Birth mother is continuing with pregnancy and will give the baby to DNA parents. In other words, what happened? the woman wanted to have her own eggs impregnated, right, with her husband's zera, and instead there was a mix-up, and another woman's eggs ended up going into her.
With whose zera?
Not hers, not theirs, I guess.
Not theirs.
And so, she's basically, you know, she's basically carrying someone else's baby, so to speak. And she says she's gonna give the baby to the DNA parents. She's gonna carry it to term and give it to the DNA parents at the end. That's a mistake that happened in
the hospital. You're going to put in your eggs and sperm into your room.
The machon put, yeah. But what's the status of all this? Same questions over here. Who's the mother? Who's the father? Right here is an interesting question. Who's the mother? Is the mother the mother? Now, if it's the mother's own eggs, so then, you know, it seems mistaber. But what happens if it's another mother's eggs and gets put into this woman? What do we say about that? So let's do a few different things. So Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Shlita, so he says about Yichus Imahot Bahashtalat Ubar Berechem Shalacheret, Ha'olam Imashikadavnu, summarizing everything that he had written that we didn't read. Shalom idiachis aben achar ha'em shaholida, v'lo achar ha'em she'ibarto. That is the woman that carries the baby to term that is considered the mother. Vasur ba'achoto me'em hamolida, umutar ba'achoto me'em she'ibarto.
We talking about surrogacy here?
No. Well, yes, but yes, but.
So the.
But here, the mother that we're interested in here is really the mother.
Surrogacy with no intention of pregnancy.
Which means
this is not talking about a mistake case.
The woman who's carrying the term, it's not the donor mother whose eggs have been harvested. It's the woman carrying this donated egg.
Well, what he said, whatever the situation is, whether it is whoever gives birth is the mother. Whoever carries the baby,
which means the other woman is not the mother, so this child is now, let's say, for example, allowed to marry that woman.
That's right. Says, Asur ba'achoto me'em hamolida, umutar ba'achoto me'em she'ibarto.
I don't understand that word again.
He can marry the sister, I don't know what goes to the sister, but he cannot marry the sister of the mother that gave birth to him, but he can marry the sister of the mother that conceived him. The egg, right?
Yeah.
Zulat lafi svarat Rabbi Kiveger be'em nitzarif svarat hanitivot shasur ba'achoto me'imo shibarto mutar ba'achoto me'em shiladito. However, there is another opinion that does exactly the opposite of Rabbi Kiveger. K'shenichret ubarto v'hu avar l'rechem Yisraelit. What is that? Nochrit. K'shenochrit ubarto v'hu avar l'rechem Yisraelit. Chem em arishona ita nochrit b'zeh. Ah, so it's Jewish, right? So. So is the baby Jewish? So what would we say if according to the first svara, which seems to be the svara? But he says, "Achen im arishona haita nochrit, baze aben tzarich gerut, v'achar sheitkayer yitaches leimo shiladato l'svarat hanetivot." Basically, they try to be machmir for both, which is reasonable. They're not sure. It's reasonable. Chumra, that's the shita that seems to be the main shita. We're machmir for both, so we wouldn't be allowed to marry the sister neither of his mother who gave birth to him, nor the mother that came from the egg. And if one of those was not Jewish, then they do gerus the chumra, and it wouldn't be allowed to marry a kohen, presumably. Okay? You know what we didn't talk about was... Sorry?
No, because it goes according.
Yeah, the father doesn't matter. One thing that we didn't talk about was, you're going back for a second with all the IUI business about, you know, what does it mean when Rav Moshe says that the non-Jewish father doesn't matter? So does the non-Jewish father not matter because there's no mamzerus with a non-Jew anyways, even if there was a maisabia? Or is it, as Rav Moshe seems to state, that the problem is, that the reason it's the whole thing is okay, and even if it was a Jew, it would be okay, is because there's no Maisabiyah. So there's no Maisabiyah, so there's no Mamzerus. But how does that work exactly? Because at the end of the day, right, you have Reuben who's married to Rachel, and then Shimon steps in and provides the Zerah for Rachel, and Shimon is Jewish, and Rachel is married. And the child is definitely not Reuven's, right? And it appears to be, Rav Moshe says, it seems to be that he's saying, it belongs to Shimon. Shimon's a father. And yet, there's no mamzerus. So how does that work? So skip Rav Avadya for a second, and jump to this Rav Moshe. So he says, v'zera zeh shiotzi, yachniso b'shoferet l'beten ha'isha b'yamim sheruya l'hereyon av shelo tevla. Even if she hasn't toveled, it's okay. Meaning she's inida, let's say. She's inida, you can still inject the sperm. V'yatzab azeh mitzvat peruvu, k'shetolid ha'isha l'idezeh. And Rav Moshe says, you're yotzi peruvu. So let's recap here. We're not worried about mamzerus, according to Rav Moshe's shita. We're not worried about mamzerus at all. Not really. He has a way to get around everything, but you're not really worried about mamzerus. You're not worried about Anita, the fact that she's Anita. However, the father is Makai in the midst of Peruvu.
Father means the husband.
The biological father. Whoever provided the Zara. If it's the father, great. If it's the husband, then great. If it's not, then whoever it is. Something la beit shmuel lo myri la beit shmuel. Don't know. Shkata beferish the af al nit abra rambati dehu beno lekol davar af latzeit bo mitzvah peruvu. Now, how does this work though? Vayim b'minchas chinuch. This is a very, very important minchas chinuch. Be mitzvah aleph. The first mitzvah in Sefer Achinuch is peruvu, which it's not surprising terribly, except for the fact that the Torah hasn't been given yet. So. But he counts it from Bereshit, not from Noah. Okay, there's a whole thing. So Shetir it's Machmad said the mitzvah peruvu eina ela ala maaseh ela al havayat abanim. Okay, now let me just give you the background over there for the minchas chinuch. So the minchas chinuch, the background over here is as follows: the minchas chinuch wants to know. The Gemara says that if a man has relations with a woman that he's not allowed to have relations with, perform Gila Arayot, and the baby comes from it, the Gemara says, he is Mekayim Peruvu. Okay? Man has relations with a married woman, he's Mekayim, and the woman has a baby, he is Mekayim Peruvu. What's the problem? Tosos asked a question over here. What's the problem with that? Mitzvah ba ba vera. It's mitzvah ba ba vera. He shouldn't be able to be mekayim mitzvah peruvu.
I don't think he's looking to do a mitzvah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's even if he was, it's mitzvah ba ba vera. So Tosos has his answer to it. What's Tosos' answer? So Tosos on the spot says, you have to know the rules of mitzvah ba ba vera. Mitzvah ba ba vera is only when it is beidna. Beidna is Aramaic for simultaneous, that the Avera and the Mitzvah happen at the same time. And Tosos comes up with a fancy Chiddush. He says, the Avera of Gilui Arayot comes right away at the beginning.
Happened 9 months ago.
No. Not that fancy. The Avera of Gilui Arayot, sorry, even fancier, I should say. The Avera of Gilui Arayot occurs B'tchilat Bia.
Peruvu comes when she gives birth.
Peruvu, no. Peruvu comes at Sof Bia.
But she conceives.
When a man, when is he violating the mitzvah, the Avera of Gilui Arayot? When is he violating Gilui Arayot? At the beginning.
What are you doing?
Right at the beginning, right? The end of the act is usually when the mitzvah Peruvu occurs. So Tosa says, It's a long enough interval that it's not bidna. That's what Tosot says. The mitzvah doesn't occur at the same time the Avera occurs. Okay, that's Tosot's answer. Minchas Chinuch doesn't like this answer. And so he provides a different answer. He provides the answer that, no, says the mitzvah of Gilui Arayot occurs in the Bia. The mitzvah of Peruvu is not in the Bia. It's when the baby comes out, when the child comes out. The mitzvah of Peruvu is to cause a baby to be born. It's to cause a baby to be born.
No, but
however you do it.
That's
to have a baby.
That's, can't think of the word. If if it's causing the baby to be born, that's caused 9 months ago. That's not caused as the baby is born.
No.
The cause
it's to have a baby be born. When the baby is born, that is when you were Mekayim the Mitzvah Peruvu. The Maisa that you did, you're right, the Maisa that you did was back
birth,
then.
Then you're saying, yeah. Not the cause.
Yeah, but obviously you're right. You caused the whole thing to happen 9 months ago, right? But, and that was the Maaseh Mitzvah.
If the baby
but the Mitzvah
then
itself, the Kiyum Mitzvah occurs when the baby is born.
During the pregnancy, then it's not
the baby? Normal. Of course not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, almost everybody agrees with that. Almost everybody agrees that the baby being born is sine qua non of birth. It's like it's required. It's of peruvu. It's required. You know, the bia is not the end of the mitzvah. It can't be. But the minchas chinuch is that it's a mitzvah of totza'a. It's a cause. It's a result. Sorry, it's a result based. It's a result oriented mitzvah. Now Rav Moshe is taking that minchas chinuch and he says the mitzvah is peruvu enu ala maaseh ala al havayat habanim. It's not about the maaseh bia. It's on the having children. That's why, if a child, what do we know? We all know that halacha, right? That you're only mekayim the mitzvah puravu if your children have children. That's actually, you know, your children have children. That's when you're really mekayim the mitzvah puravu.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you're actually mekayim the mitzvah puravu, when your children have children. Vim kein, gam al yedei ambati avshu shelo b'maseh. Tamiyatza, that and the Minchas Chinuch says this. He says that's why in the case of the Ambati, the case of the woman in the bath, that's a mitzvah peruvu. The biological owner of the sperm is Mekayim the mitzvah peruvu.
Who it is, and the guy himself doesn't know.
Okay, but he was Mekayim the mitzvah peruvu, wherever he is, whoever he is. Ulani as daiti, yesh letaris bepshitu ta'av shelo mistaber lomar ka Minchas Chinuch shemitzvah lo tiyah lamasa. Of lamasa shenistava peruvu ena holada zabanim v'zeh eno biyado. Ela mitzvah v'chiyuv shalav hu liv'ol yishto biya gemur shiyeh efshar mizeh leholid. But in the end, Rav Moshe says, I don't think the Minchas Chinuch is completely right, that the mitzvah is not on the maaseh, but the maaseh shenistava peruvu is not holadat banim, because that's not up to you. But the mitzvah and the chiyuv is to be with your wife with a full bia such that it will cause the baby to be born. Okay, now, what are we getting out of all this? What we're getting out of all this is that according to Rav Moshe, when this happens, there's no problem of mamzerut because there's no masa bia. And masa bia, what? Right, that she was impregnated by Shimon, who's not her husband. Right, so Rav Moshe would say there's no mamzerus here. I heard it from Rav Shachter. I didn't see this inside in Rav Moshe, but Rav Shachter said that Rav Moshe suggested that this was actually a really creative and valid way around mamzerus in general. So you have a mamzer that wants to have a child, so his options are limited. Right? Because the amount of women that he can actually marry is very limited. He can marry a Giyaret. He can marry another Mamzeret. That's it. Apparently there's like an underground Shidduch. No, really. Like apparently there's like a network for people like this. Rav Moshe had two interesting suggestions that I've heard about. One is written. He said that one thing that you can do, you're going to love this, he should hang out at places where people are learning to be gerim, right? And then he should offer that instead of a woman having to go through the whole gerus process, she will agree to become his shifcha knanit, and then he'll free her immediately, making her Jewish and allowing him to marry her. So this is basically a legal loophole in order to do it. I don't know if this has ever been done. I don't know if there's a rabbi that will allow you to do it, but that's one way. The other way, Rav Shachter quoted in the name of Rav Moshe, was that what you could do is, if he just wants to have a baby, then he can do this. He can take his zera, and he can donate it, and a Jewish woman will take it, and become pregnant through it. And the child will not be a mamzer. Now this is surprising. Why would the child not be a mamzer?
because it wasn't done.
Oh, so Rav Schachter had an explanation for this, which I now forget, but something seemed off about it to me. But I think the answer would be that Rav Moshe's opinion is that we tend to think that Mamzeros is something that's passed down genetically. If you're a Mamzer, then your child's going to be a Mamzer. And then his child's going to be a Mamzer. And that's it. That's all you can do about it, right? But what if that's not the case? What if Mamzerot is passed down when a Mamzer sleeps with a woman that's not allowed to sleep with a Mamzer? And that relationship creates the Mamzeros. In which case here, that never happens. There's no Masabiya. So this is a solution to a Mamzer being able to have a child without the child being a Mamzer, because there's no Masabiya. And he can be Mekayim Puravu, according to Rav Moshe, like this. Interesting. Okay. Getting back to... What?
He got married.
No. It would be us to marry. Yeah. They can stay friends, though. Rav Avadi Yosef... Yeah, so Rav Avadia talks about the case of IVF, just whether or not it's mutter or not. He says, in conclusion, it's a long tshuva by Yabi Omer, regarding a baby developed in a lab, it appears that his status is the same as that which the latter-day sages were permitted regarding inserting a husband seed. In other words, IVF should be just as mutter as IUI, when there's no way for the woman to conceive in the normal manner. This is talking about with a husband. This is husband-to-wife IVF. So they take the eggs out, and insert the husband's sperm, and then reinsert it back into the mother. And one must supervise closely, lest the husband's seed be switched for the seed of another, like in the CNN article. It would be good to have two religiously observant doctors provide full supervision from the time the seed is produced until it is put into the womb. Yeah.
Make sure that the seed is the one. Everything is connected to the...
What about surrogacy? So, we said surrogacy... We're machmer both ways. We say that the mother is both the donor and the carrier.
So even if the surrogate is Jewish or not Jewish, no. If she's not Jewish, you have
to... Either way, they're going to have to do gear. If the surrogate mother is Jewish, so then fine, the baby is fine. It's just that the baby can't marry relations of the mother or the donor mother. If either the donor mother or the carrying mother is not Jewish, then the baby has to undergo gerus lechumra, or gerus. Last thing, this is what we didn't do on that Shabbos. This is a Rosh or Weiss triple parent IVF. What's this? So this is shades of the original Moshe. It's going to remind you of that. It says shal kvodo im teremet ha mitochondria. So let me read to you. Actually, in English, it's in the on the source sheet that I have. Should have a comment over there. Let me describe to you what's going on over here. Here. Okay. Mitochondria are tiny energy generators inside cells containing their own little bit of DNA, which is separate to the genetic material held in the nucleus. They are present in the egg but not in the sperm, and are passed down the female line more or less unchanged from mothers to all her offspring, and then from daughters to grandchildren and so on. In some cases, women can suffer from various mitochondrial disorders, which they are at risk of then passing on to their children. These disorders may be relatively mild, but in perhaps 5 to 10 cases a year in the UK, babies will be born with very serious disease. There are new proposed techniques whereby the inheritance of faulty mitochondrial DNA could be avoided by a specific type of IVF called three-parent IVF. There are a couple ways of doing the new procedures, but essentially the new proposed techniques take the egg of an affected woman, that's going to be the mother, and remove the nuclear DNA, the vast majority of our DNA which goes to shape our basic features. So basically that's the main stuff, right? That's what makes your baby yours, right? A donated egg is also taken from another woman, its nuclear DNA removed, leaving behind the healthy mitochondrial DNA. Okay, so the nuclear DNA of the affected woman is transplanted into the body of the healthy DNA, of the healthy egg. In other words, all the stuff that makes this woman her is taken out and grafted onto this kind of shell, mitochondrial shell of an egg, which has had all the nuclear DNA removed, of the donating woman. Minus her tiny fraction of unwanted fully mitochondrial DNA concerned. It means a baby would have, you can see that this is from the UK. It means a baby would have genetic information from mum, dad, and a second woman's mitochondria. So the genetic material will be from all three of them. Mm-hmm. Not only being carried.
Because she has some sort of sickness.
Yeah. So in other words, the egg itself is donated by two mothers. The technique being proposed might alter just 0.1% of an embryo's DNA, but the effect on that potential life is enormous, as mitochondria works in every single cell in the human body to produce energy. In other words, it permeates the whole child. It's like, you know, it goes throughout the body. It's not like it's centered in one part of the body. I'm not sure how important that is. So, what's the status of this? Who's the mother? All that. Shal kvodo im toremet ha-mitochondria hi-isha nochriya ma-din ha-yilod ha-im Yisrael ogoy. So the one, okay, so here, the point over here is that, let's say, in a classic case of IVF, so the whole egg is being donated by, let's say, the non-Jewish woman, impregnated, and then implanted into a Jewish woman. So the Jewish woman doesn't provide anything, she just provides a womb. But the baby's DNA is made up completely of her husband and this non-Jewish woman. But here, that's not true. Here, the nuclear DNA, which is really the good stuff, right? That's the stuff that makes her.
Comes from
the mother.
The Jewish mother.
Jewish mother. And then the egg, which is the receptacle, comes from the nochria.
Back in the Jewish mother?
Yes. Who's the mother? Im batia im kshira la kuhuna, im av kohen haim yale la duchan, v'kayotze b'shele shonot, hine kvar rachti b'makom acher. He says, I talked about another place. B'kol ikar ha-sheila shal trumat beitzit ha-em ho havlad mityaches acharei isha shatarmat ha-beitzit o-shem mityaches. So I talked about this elsewhere. V'katavti dorat shnei gdolei ador maranan v'rabanan ha-ogon r'shloma zalman orbach v'yashiv sheyesh ladun bazad din safek emet v'nachon. We treat it like a safek, like we saw in Rav Zalman Nechem Goldberg. We say both ways. V'av sheyesh ladun b'svar lakan v'lakan. However, over here, that was all in the classic case. In our case, kasher rubo ha'atzum shelachomer atorashati, it's DNA, matzui begarina beitzit shel ha'em ha'yehudiya v'rak ke'alfit mimenu, a thousandth of the material, matzui bechelek ha'lakoch min ha'toremet ha'nochriya. Vaday mistaber dazlinen bater harov vaikar vavlad Yisrael lekol davar v'imaviv kohen hukach din avlad. He wants to say the mother is the mother, and the father is the father. The baby is a kohen. If he's a kohen, the baby is Jewish 100%. Doesn't need girus. Kvar giliti dati pami marbe shekitkat. Oh, this is just a nice ending. Okay, to put a little atifa on this whole shir. גיליתי דעתי פעמים הרבה שהתקדמות המדע והטכנולוגיה מציבה בפנינו שאלות חמורות שלא שיערו מבותינו. Technology puts in front of us questions that our forefathers could not have imagined. ואין בידינו ראיות לפותרן. We don't have any proofs from previous sources in order to solve them. ודורנו היה צריך גדולי עולם כמו רמב"ן והרשב"א להכריע בשאלות חמורות אלה בדימוי מילתא למילתא בכוח הסברה. We would need people like the Ramban and the Rashba to be able to compare cases that we have now to the cases that came before. Vanan yatme di yatme, but we are orphans. Uke etzba bekira besvara. Be etzba bekira. I think our fingers are stuck in the wall. I don't know. We're stuck. Ein anuotzim yadeinu v'ragleinu. We don't know what to do. Ach bechrech aleinu lishtadel itametz biyosha asvara lahavin davar mitoch davar. But nevertheless, we have to try. We have to put the effort in. V'nei kla gadol b'kol makom. Kasher yesh stira ben rov u'miut. Harov machriya tamiut. This is, what rule am I taking over here? I'm taking the rule of rov and miut. We have a majority and a minority. Kachalacha b'tarovat isver heter. V'kach mistaber gam benidu didan. D'yesh l'achriya d'ha'em shekimat kol achomer ha'geneti mi'atzma u'b'sara hi ha'em. Al pi ha'alacha v'avlad mitachis achariya. So he says, look, I'm afraid to say this. I don't know. I have no basis for this. There's no basis for using rov and miut on DNA. You won't find that. You can't find that. There's nothing. There's no basis for it. However, he says, I have to do something. And it seems to me like it makes sense to apply that in this case. Even though you won't find any Gemara that says this. You won't find any Rishon to say this because they didn't have these concepts. Nevertheless, he wants to apply it. V'afti yesh makom mitvakech lomar din banuli demot milta milta harei bebitol berov amina de davar amami lobato. Look, if we're going to do this, let's go all the way. There's also a concept in kashrut called davar amamid, where you have one part, one ingredient that's being added, which basically catalyzes the whole mixture and performs a very important function. So, for example, what's the most famous example of davar amamid? They make cheese. They make cheese. So the what's the word? The rennet. The rennet is a davar amamid because the rennet is what makes the cheese, right? And the rennet usually often comes from a non-kosher source in certain kinds of cheese, and so it causes a problem. The rennet has to be kosher. Right, even the rennet is a tiny, tiny little bit. It's an enzyme. Yeah, but without it, the whole thing doesn't happen. So it's a davar amamid. So too, he wants to say maybe over here. It's not batel. It's still there. I don't like the idea of having two mothers. See, before, when we were worried about who's the mother, is it the donor or is it the carrier? Nobody says it's both. We say we don't know. So we have to treat it like it's both. But nobody says it's both. But over here, if you're going to say, basically over here, we can safely say that, you know, it's either this one or it's that one, but we don't want to say it's both. We don't want to be machmir both ways because it's not that we don't know. It's either this one or it's that one. It's got to be, he doesn't want to say there's two mothers. Yeah, he says, I still think maybe lechumer we should do giur. He says, I think we should always do giur lechumer whenever the question arises, just to make everybody feel better. Considered a Yisrael meikaro. If it's a boy, he can duchen. If it's a girl, she can marry a kohen. Mishum kach yesh legayro betzina lo pirsum. So you should do it privately. Kadesh liya kechucha utulu lachshela. So just do it privately. Do a small gear. It's not like not a public gear. But at the end of the day, he's not even treating the geiros as something that was required. So the baby can duchen, and if it's a girl, then she can marry a kohen, and nobody should say that they can't. So that was where we didn't cover that Shabbos, but that's a pretty pretty big issue. Okay. Shkoyach.
Oh, sorry, just a quick question. It was that opinion before that whoever was the